couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we've got a super themed today show. Not really. I don't care about football. I know it's Super Bowl weekend, and I'm a movie guy myself. So the most important thing to me when it comes to Super Bowl weekend is the movie trailers they're going to be showing during the Super Bowl, which a lot of those you can actually get online already. So we're going to actually hit one or two of those this week. We're going to also talk about some news, Tarantino going kind of crazy, some Oscar nominations and what happened there. There's actually some inside baseball news about Oscar nominations. The new movies this week, we're going to be talking about That Awkward Moment, Labor Day, Best Night Ever, and Tim's Vermeer. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Oscar-nominated shorts, and we're going to have a trailer park, we're going to have the DVD roundup, and before we start, I want to give a big happy anniversary to Dr. Strangelove. Yes, that movie came out 50 years ago this week, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. We all have our precious bodily fluids ready to go into this show in the magical studio in the sky, protecting them from deep freeze that has been happening across the country. Now, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Again, if you want to call me, you can call me at 740-205-6456, or you can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com, on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, or twitter.com/Kevin Carr. And we're just going to move right on into our news segment.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, one final thing. We talked about last week about the Google Glass situation at the AMC Theater Easton in Columbus, Ohio. I've said what I kind of had to say about Google Glass. The one point I didn't make is I predict that Google Glass, in this sense of always having to be connected, this is this generation's Bluetooth. Do you remember, maybe it was about 10 years ago, and there were these people who'd walk around, they'd put a Bluetooth in their ear, and it would blink blue every, like, what, 10, 20 seconds? And they thought they were so important, because no matter where they went, they could be in the bathroom, they could be at a restaurant having dinner with somebody. I've seen people in movies with their Bluetooth headset on, blinking and a light. This generation's Google Glass. That is what that is. And it's for D-bags who just can't disconnect. And I'm all for Google Glass. I'm all for technology. But the bottom line is, when you have this technology, learn to disconnect and be a human being for once, and not just be a jerk about it and pretend you're more important than everybody else, when really all you're doing is you're getting texts, you know, from a buddy saying, hey, you want to go out drinking tonight? The next piece of news, this is actually also an update from last week. Quentin Tarantino, we all talked about, and it was all over the internet, about his Hateful Eight script, how it was leaked, and he was originally going to be making this movie, and he had given it to like three people, like I think it was like Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, and Bruce Dern, and one of their agents then made photocopies of it and sent it around Hollywood, and everybody started looking at it, and it leaked on the internet, and he was all upset. He had a little bit of a tantrum and basically walked away from the project. A little bit of an update. He has now said he's going to sue Gawker, and he has retained a lawyer. Gawker is the website. Gawker.com is a website that they didn't publish the script, but they published the story about the script, and they provided a link. And people could then go to this anonymous, obscure link and download the script. And he's not suing them for copyright infringement. He's suing them for basically being an accomplice to it. I've got friends online who, and they'll remain nameless in this discussion because I don't want to step on any toes. But I actually saw people making comments and saying, well, they deserve it. And they were being jerks about the whole thing. And I hope Tarantino wins because of that. And this wasn't real journalism. Okay, first of all, every website that's online does not necessarily have to be journalism to be protected by the First Amendment. This is freedom of speech. Second of all, I don't think Gawker ever claimed to be a journalist. A journalistic site. They never claim to have integrity. I mean, this is like TMZ. TMZ is technically a journalism site, but TMZ is, it's gossip. That's what it is. And Gawker has stories about a woman having sex with her pit bull. These are the stories that Gawker's famous for. They shouldn't, they're not liable for what's published on another site, even if they link to it. And this is why it's important that this case does not win for Tarantino. There's this thing called case law and case history. And if you have a case that you're arguing in front of a court, you can go to pre-existing cases and say, look, other courts interpreted it this way. And therefore, because it was ruled for this, you need to rule it in my favor further on. Anybody who's been against SOPA and PIPA, these piracy acts that they want to basically shut down the internet and make people who link to other sites that have pirated information, if you're against that, you have to be against Quentin Tarantino in this lawsuit, because you can't hold liable somebody for referencing a site. You're not in control of the site, and just because you provide a link does not suddenly make you culpable. And this is why bad laws and bad judgments are bad. Even if you think the people deserve it, it's bad. There's a whole slew of laws that have been going through the country lately that are poorly written laws that have well-meaning intended consequences, but when they put to the letter of the law or they're interpreted by the courts, they are actually bad news. We're going to have a couple more news stories we're going to talk about later, but right now we got to move into the trailer. All right, now, one of the ones we're not talking about is A Million Ways to Die in the West by Seth MacFarlane. I can't play that on the radio. It's a funny trailer, though, if you want to check it out. It's for his Western coming up. But I am going to talk about a couple things happening. First of all, RoboCop's got a new viral campaign, which is actually pretty cool. It takes place in the Computer Electronics Show in 2027, and it's Omnicorp releasing its RC2000 program.
Introducing the RC2000 project, where man and machine become one. The power, strength, and speed of a robot with the soul of a human. Just think of the possibilities for the police, the military, or even in our own lives. The next step in our very evolution.
When I first heard about RoboCop being remade, I was like everybody else, I was against it. When the first set photos came out, I said, this guy looks stupid. But you know what? I'm kind of looking forward to it, I have to say. Next week, we'll see if it's any good, and we'll talk about it next week. But I'm actually kind of excited for this RoboCop remake. The next one is, this is a Super Bowl spot. Noah, Darren Aronofsky is directing an epic version of Noah. And they released the Super Bowl spot. You're going to see it on Sunday night when you watch the Super Bowl. But if you go and you can find, and we'll provide a link online, you can go find it now. A lot of places actually have it. This is the Noah Super Bowl spot.
A great flood is coming.
The storm cannot be stopped, but it can be survived.
We have to protect our family and save the innocent.
Do you want to live?
Protect your mother. Protect them all.
Is this the end of everything?
Beginning of everything.
Once again, here's another one I wasn't necessarily interested in when I first heard about it. I'm not a huge Darren Aronofsky fan. I think the guy's a bit pretentious at times. But I'll tell you, this does look like an epic show. This looks like an epic version of a movie, and it looks cool. It doesn't look dry and boring. It looks like it has the effects of The Fountain without being boring and stupid like The Fountain. And it also, it's not going to be just this really heavy internal character study like The Wrestler or Black Swan was. And although I love Black Swan, it's nice to see Aronofsky going to the bigger movies again. So this one kind of makes me look forward to it, even though it's probably going to be a little bit controversial when it comes out in a month or so. The next one is Maleficent, which actually played during the Grammys, and it features Lana Del Rey's cover of Once Upon a Dream.
Well, well. Is evil in this world. Hatred and revenge.
You know, these movies have been sort of like all the rage recently. They had Snow White and the Huntsman, and you had Oz the Great and Powerful, where they're going and deconstructing old fairy tales. That's cool. I think this one looks interesting. I'm curious to see how they handle it, especially since it's a completely internal Disney property, as opposed to like Snow White and the Huntsman, which was done by Universal, and you had Oz the Great and Powerful, which is partly owned by Warner Brothers. There's a rights issue there. This one looks like an interesting movie. I'm kind of looking forward to it. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Best Night Ever and Labor Day.
Oh,
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are moving into the movie review segments, which is, you know, what we do here. That is my expertise. The first one we're going to cover is a smaller film. It's a lesser-known film. You can find it on demand, and you can find it in some theaters around the country. This is Best Night Ever. On the eve of her wedding, a bachelorette and her friends head to Las Vegas for a crazy night of fun and danger.
Are you really going to film everything?
Yes.
Hi, Claire.
Trust me, one day you'll watch this and thank me for capturing your last night of freedom.
Give me all your jewelry.
Come on.
I'll take the ring, too.
He victimized us. And now it's time for a little payback.
Let's get my ring back.
Oh, my.
I think it's time we ditch the stolen vehicle.
Pull over right now.
Zoe, did you record everything last night?
This movie is actually kind of significant because it's directed by Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer, and they're most famous for doing spoof movies. They worked on the early scary movies. They did movies like Date Movie, Epic Movie, Meet the Spartans, Disaster Movie. Most recently, they did The Starving Games, which was a spoof of The Hunger Games. I actually talked about that on a previous show, and it just came out on DVD and Blu-ray last week. This is significant because it's not a spoof. Even though if you watch the trailer, they're really trying to spin off the Spring Breakers version of the spoof because they got the girls, they've got these ski caps with the eyes cut out of them like in Spring Breakers. But it's not at all even close to being a direct spoof of Spring Breakers. And here's the thing. I'm conflicted with this movie because on one hand, I think it's great that Friedberg and Seltzer are stepping outside of their comfort zone. They've been doing these spoof movies for more than 10 years, and they've had some pretty big success with them. But those movies have consistently made the worst movies of the year list. I mean, the only person I can think of that consistently produces such garbage is recently Adam Sandler, and to a degree also like Tyler Perry. You have these people who have these audiences that they cater to, and it's terrible stuff. And the spoofs that Friedberg and Seltzer have been doing have sort of waned. They've lost their edge. They've lost their appeal to even their core audience, which is why their last two movies, which was The Starving Games. Their last movie, The Starving Games, didn't even really get a proper release in theaters, and Vampires Suck, which they did a couple years ago, which I actually kind of liked, I'm embarrassed to admit, that one had a minor release it was a wide release, but it didn't actually do as well. I mean, I think Disaster Movie was their first one that really sort of fell apart, and they just got old. I love the fact that they're stretching out, and that's cool. With that said, this isn't a good movie. It's you know what? It's trying to be like The Hangover. There's always been these movies of like, let's get into this night of debauchery. Let's get into this craziness. And it's been propelled by movies like The Hangover or Bridesmaids. And we saw that last year with a movie called Bachelorette, which was terrible, starring Kirsten Dunst and Ila Fisher and Rebel Wilson and Lizzie Kaplan. That movie's terrible. This is at least better than Bachelorette. But then again, it's not better than, it's no worse than Bachelorette. And that was a proper movie that was filmed. Here's the problem, though. This is also found footage. And that's while Friedberg and Seltzer are stepping out of their comfort zone, they're also going into another shtick. They're going into another gimmick. And even you heard it in the trailer, it's just every cliche from a found footage. Are you really going to tape this whole thing? Yes, I have to document this. And some crazy stuff happens in this movie. The found footage angle to it falls apart because at some point it even beyond Cloverfield, it gets to the point where you're like, why are you even still taping this? I mean, you've got like you people are bleeding and almost dead. Why are you bothering to continue to film? It, not only that, you have a criminal record. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. If this had not been a found footage movie, it actually would have been better. And the problem is it has all the problems with this found footage movie. Bad camera moves, you've got no coherent soundtrack, but at least it's not a spoof. At least it's not a spoof. So I can't recommend this movie. It's a sucks. The movie sucks. But I do find it interesting, and I encourage these guys to go outside of the comfort zone and do something different because they've got enough experience doing movies. They might as well do this one. Anyways, like I said, official review, it sucks. It's no worse than Bachelorette.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the next movie, which is Labor Day. At the end of the summer in 1987, a single mother and her son encounter a prison escapee who lays low in their home for the long weekend.
Where do you want to go?
Your house.
Who are police looking for?
Frank Chambers, an inmate at Stinchfield Prison serving 18 years for murder.
I'd be grateful if you let me stay till nightfall.
Isn't it against the law to hide a fugitive?
If someone were to come by, it would need to look like I kidnapped you.
How do I know you won't hurt us? I'm stronger than you think.
I've never intentionally hurt anyone in my life.
What happened?
Just know that there's more to this story than you'll see in that paper there.
This movie was a bizarre release because it's total award bait film. And in fact, Kate Winslet was nominated for a Golden Globe. She didn't win, but she was nominated. So the Hollywood Foreign Press got a chance to see it early. It's not coming out. It doesn't come out until now. Well, you know, a full month after the year is over. And it had this very, I think it played in LA in one theater just to be award consideration. But they didn't show it to anybody aside from the Hollywood Foreign Press. I'm in three voting critic organizations and, you know, not insignificant on the map here. I vote in the BFCA for the Critics' Choice Movie Awards. They didn't show it to us. They didn't care what we had to say, which was stupid. Because if you're really kind of pumped this up to be a movie, we got the soundtrack to consider, but I'm not going to consider a soundtrack if you don't show me the movie. It makes sense why they didn't show it to critics. It's not that good. I'm not going to bury the lead here. It's not that good of a movie. This film has some decent performances in it. Kate Winslet is fine. Josh Brolin does a good job. The kid who plays her son, he does a fine job. There are some good performances. And in terms of technical directing, it's well done. But I really think Jason Reitman, who directed this, he had such a great film with like Juno and Thank You for Smoking and Up in the Air. I wasn't a big fan of Young Adult, but a lot of people love that. This movie is just, it falls into like Nicholas Sparks territory. It just gets so drippy and sappy. And first of all, it starts off with a premise I don't even buy, because how he gets to their home, I'm not going to spoil it, but they should have never have gotten out of the store. When he meets them in public, they should have never have gotten past that moment, because this is insanely dangerous. And this could have easily turned into a torture porn, rape and murder, horrible, violent film in the hands of a different person. It may have. And then it turns into this bizarre Lifetime movie. And it's every cliche you can think of, you know, of course, because he's the father figure that the boy doesn't really have right now. And he teaches her to love again, and they bond because they're spending time. And when you really kind of reveal this guy's backstory, you're expecting it to be like he's in prison for a crime he didn't commit, or he was framed or whatever. You really find out what happens. You're like, no, this guy should be in prison for what he did. Now, he may not be a sociopath, but this is not something that he was, oh, poor guy. Too bad this happened. I mean, this movie is everything that you'd find wrong, everything I find wrong with weepy soap opery TV movie type things. And that's why I didn't like it. So ultimately, this one also gets a sucks.
It sucks.
Well, that's about it. That's our bright and cheery segment on movies I'm saying that suck. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some other films, That Awkward Moment and Tim's Vermeer.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are moving out of the suck segment into a segment with a couple more movies that are hopefully better than what we had in the previous segment. The first one I want to talk about is That Awkward Moment. Three men in Manhattan make a pact to stay single, but each enters into a potential long-term relationship.
If you're single, we're staying single with you, man.
What do I have to do?
I'm still not gonna do that. That was gonna make you wait like 40 days.
I was gonna make you wait too, then to realize I'm a dude.
We're not supposed to see him more than twice in 1 week. And you're seeing this chick twice in 1 day.
What's the deal with you and Chelsea?
What the?
What the?
Hey, it doesn't mean what you think it means.
It doesn't?
Oh, what does our relationship mean to you then?
Wait, you guys are in a relationship?
Probably the most notable part of this film is how much, at least for me, is how much promotion it has been getting. I've been getting press releases for a year about this movie. And it stars Zac Efron, which is funny because last week we talked about a movie that stars Vanessa Hudgens. So we sort of have this High School Musical 1-2 punch going on. These High School Musical veterans trying to break out of that sort of squeaky clean Disney image. And while I think Hudgens did a fine job in her film last week, I think this is going to be doing a little bit more for Zac Efron. He's really been struggling to find footing as a star. He was in movies like New Year's Eve and that awful, oh, just really terrible Charlie St. Cloud. And then he was in that movie with the one with Nicole Kidman where there's wee-wee going on and stuff like that. That's the best way I could describe it. I am trying to be delicate. I made it sound even worse than what it was. But that awkward moment is him sort of really stepping into adult territory and saying, look, I'm not just a Disney brat anymore. I am a sexy guy who's going to be doing a movie. But it also stars Miles Teller, who's less sexy. But he's actually having quite a bit of a career. He was in movies like, well, he was in that awful Project X, but I'll forgive him for that. But he was in Footloose. He played the friend in Footloose, who was actually very, he did a very good job in that. He's shown up in a bunch of other things. Miles Teller is a very funny guy, and he can play cool, but he can also play a bit dorky, and he works in this. And then you have Michael B. Jordan, who he was in that awful movie Chronicle, but he was more importantly in Fruitvale Station from last year, which was got a lot of award buzz, didn't get any real nominations, even though the guy did a fantastic job acting in that. This film is meant to be that raunch-com. It's meant to be raunchy and blue, and yeah, it has a lot of dirty jokes in it. It has a lot of language in there. It has a lot of sexual references, and that's fine for what it is. I've never been a huge fan of movies that just go ribald to go ribald. There needs to be a certain story behind it. And that was one of my, like, for example, if you take the Hangover series, the reason I liked the first Hangover is while it was raunchy and crazy and ribald, it had a story behind it. And there was actual characters trying to do stuff. And that's part of the reason why I hated the second Hangover, because it didn't do anything. It just retread everything we saw in the first film. And then it just said, let's make it crazier. Let's make it crass, more crass. Let's make it more extreme. At least with the third Hangover, they actually tried to do something a little bit different. This movie, it has that raunchiness to it. But it has the raunchiness to it that guys have when they get together and talk anyways. I mean, guys are crass. Guys are gross. Guys talk about bathroom humor, and they talk about physical humor and body humor, and they talk about sex a lot, and women do too. But ultimately, when you strip that away, once you get past that, there's a story here. There's actually kind of this sweet little story about three guys trying to find love in Manhattan. As corny as that sounds, that actually works for what it is. It reminds me of a movie from last year called 21 and Over, which didn't do well and not a whole lot of people liked. That was another one that people sort of branded as trying to just be crass and extreme. But when you really stripped away some of that, there was a story there. There was an interesting story about this kid trying to get through a very stressful life in college and sort of going through the changes that you do when you're in your early 20s and you feel like you have the pressure of the world on your shoulders. This one, similarly, there is a story to it. There are characters that actually have a certain degree of depth and charm to them. Yes, it's covered in male member humor. There's a lot of references to male genitalia in this movie. Yes. But you know what? Get past that. And I think it's funny too. And it's not overdone in a way. I mean, yes, it's there's a lot of it there, but it didn't seem forced. So in a way, I kind of liked it. I thought it actually kind of tells these neat little love stories there's a certain amount of honesty there. So I'm going to say that awkward moment kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, let's move on. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie we're going to talk about is a smaller release. It's getting a very limited release in theaters, and you can find it on demand too, I believe. It's Tim's Vermeer. And it's a documentary about an eccentric entrepreneur who tries to recreate a painting by Johannes Vermeer using a special optical technique.
Sometimes when I'm trying to get to sleep, all I can think about is trying to paint a Vermeer, who some consider the greatest painter of all time. At the face of it, that seems almost impossible, because I'm not a painter. I'm a computer graphics guy, and we use technology to make a realistic, beautiful image. I'm looking at this image, and I see something that looks like it came out of a video camera. There must be a way to actually get the colors accurate with mechanical means.
This one, I remember I got a screener for back in December or November, and I didn't know much about it. And a lot of times I don't get to documentaries, because documentaries rarely go wide enough and big enough that a lot of people take notice. I mean, every now and then you get your ones that kind of stand out, but a lot of documentaries fly under the radar. And I find a good documentary is fantastic, but a bad documentary can be brutal to watch and it can be boring. And there's a lot of just sort of mediocre stuff out there, even award season. This one is a fantastically well put together film. It's hosted by Penn Jillette, who's a well-known skeptic, and his show on Showtime with Teller, BS, I can't say the full word. That's a fantastic show, kind of like a little bit more raunchy version of Mythbusters. But he does like to dissect whether or not something is real. He's a skeptic. And he's an honest skeptic. He doesn't dismiss things outright. And some skeptics are just, you know, calling everything hogwash. But he tries to actually examine whether or not something is possible. And this movie is about, if you don't know who Johannes Vermeer is, he did paintings like The Girl with the Pearl Earring. And he's notable in the art world because he was able to capture through paint the way light actually looks. His work was leaps and bounds ahead of his contemporaries in terms of recognizing how light and shadow interact almost to a photographic degree. And art historians have debated whether or not he actually was able to do this with his eye, whether his naked eye was able to pick this stuff up, or whether he was using a trick like a light box or something like that. And that's what this guy, Tim, who's an entrepreneur who works in computers, and a friend of Penn Jillette, has always been trying to do. He wants to prove that you can, using whatever's at Vermeer's disposal during his time, you could use those to create a painting like this. And it's a fascinating way he does it. He actually is able to use just simple optics and a lot of time to put together a recreation of one of his most famous paintings. I'm not an art guy, so I don't know the full history of Johannes Vermeer, and I can't say I completely buy the explanation that is presented in this film. It does at times seem like any documentary, it does kind of work towards its own conclusion, and that's okay. It's a fascinating way to contemplate things, but there's a lot of unanswered questions. If you go back and you look at Vermeer's full work, This technique that he used for certain paintings that this guy is proposing, he couldn't use elsewhere. There's outdoor landscapes and that sort of things that are very famous paintings that he wouldn't have been able to do the exact same thing. He didn't have the control. But it's an interesting contemplation, and it's more interesting than what you'd expect a standard art film. So even if you're not into art, painted paintings, you can find some things to find fascinating in this film. So I say this rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
We have to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a box office and DVD roundup and Oscar shorts. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are in our final segment. Thank you all for joining me today to talk about the new movies out there. But you can't leave just yet. We still got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. We've got some box office news and some Oscar-nominated shorts. We're going to talk about those in this segment as well. First, let's talk about the box office. Was I correct? I was at least closer than I have been the last couple weeks. I said last week that Ride Along was going to sail into first place again with $26 million. It didn't make quite that much. It made $21 million, but that's close enough, especially considering I was wildly off the last 2 weeks and had no idea what was going on. So $21 million, that brought its total to $76 million at the end of the weekend. Lone Survivor came in second with $13 million. It's going to be pushing. It's going to be breaking $100 million this week. The Nut Job did pretty well. It held. It made $12 million for a total of $40. Frozen's still out there knocking around with $9.1 million last week. It's at $348 million coming out of the weekend. It's over $350 million now. That's fantastic. Well played, Disney. It timed it extremely well with this whole polar vortex thing. I hope that they don't have a movie this summer coming out called Hot as All Get Out, because I don't want it to be an insane summer. Jack Ryan is slowly falling off. It hasn't even made what I predicted it would make when it came out for that first weekend. It's at $30 million coming out of the weekend, which is nothing. But not as bad as I, Frankenstein, which came in at number six with $8.6 million. That is terrible. Now, granted, Lionsgate isn't completely on the hook for producing the movie, but they did distribute the film, and that's tanking along with the Hercules movie. Then going back down, boom, 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 award films, Devil's Due, it's down at $2.8 million. It's made $12 million over 2 weekends. Even though this is technically a box office success because it cost less money to make, found footage is cheap, but it's also like eating fast food or ramen noodles. You can feed a family of four for $20 a week just buying ramen noodles, but that doesn't mean you're going to, that's good. That's not good for you. So just because you can make cheap movies that'll turn a profit, topping off at $20 million at the box office, does not necessarily mean you should. In limited release, we had stuff like Gimme Shelter, we talked about last week, came in 23rd with $689,000. That's only a $1,790 per screen average. Not very good compared to Gloria, which only came in 39th place with $56,000, but that's a $19,000 per screen average, only on three screens. So Gloria did extremely well in its limited release. Box office predictions for this week, I am going to say that Awkward Moment tops weekend with $16 million. It's going to be a pretty slow weekend. You got the Super Bowl. Not a whole lot of people are going to be going out and seeing movies, especially on Sunday. Let's move on to some news catch up. First of all, there's a song that was nominated for an Oscar called Alone But Not Alone, and it got dumped off the Oscar nomination list because the guy who had done the song and produced the song was campaigning via email and sending letters to the Academy members, which is expressly forbidden. Moreover, the reason that they really came down hard on him is he used to be on the board of directors for the Oscars, so he knows what he can and can't do. So they dumped him off. Now you only have four songs from movies that you recognize. This was from a movie that not a whole lot of people had seen or knew of, but now you've got Let It Go from Frozen, Happy from Despicable Me 2, The Moon Song from Her, and Ordinary Love from the Mandela Long Walk to Freedom. Those are going to be fighting for the song. I think Let It Go is going to win. I think that's got locked up at this point. The other thing I want to point out is there's a new look for Doctor Who. I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, and I know a lot of people will say, hey, that's television, that's not movies. I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who. Peter Capaldi, as the 13th Doctor, technically the 13th Doctor. I mean, Tennant was 10, Matt Smith was 11. I guess you could call John Hurt 12. Anyways, the new Doctor Who, he's got a look. What's great about him is he's an older guy. And we haven't had an older Doctor since John Pertwee back in the 70s. Sort of Sylvester McCoy, but he was still a little bit younger, especially when he played Doctor Who. It's nice to see Doctor Who kind of going back to his roots, and he has that sort of, he has this waistcoat, this sort of crushed velvet looking thing, still going to that older looking eccentric style, but looks cool. I'm very much looking forward to the new Doctor Who. Next, I want to talk a little bit about one. I don't have a trailer for this, but this is something that's in release now, and depending on what city you're in, you might be able to find this. The Oscar-nominated shorts, they have all the programs, and they're playing those. That's being released this weekend. If you have any sort of interest in short films, check these out. Some of them are foreign films, so they're going to have subtitles. There's a wide, diverse range of types of movies. But you're going to see some fantastic things. I love short films. And one of the things that's great about not just the Oscars, but this program that they do every year, and they release these in blocks where you can see the animated shorts, the live action shorts, and the documentaries in three different blocks. What's great about this is it gives you a chance to have that exposure to the short films that you normally don't see. In the live action fray, you've got That Wasn't Me, which is a bit heavy-handed and sort of misery porn. I wasn't a big fan. Just Before Losing Everything is a French film about a woman trying to escape her and her family, an abusive husband. Actually a really solid, sort of tense movie. Helium, which is a very tender movie about a guy bonding with a terminally ill boy. And then Do I Have to Take Care of Everything? More of a whimsical film, but short and sweet. My favorite of the live action, though, is The Vorman Problem, which is sort of a Twilight Zone type movie starring Martin Freeman from The Hobbit. And it's a fantastic, odd sci-fi speculative fiction piece. In terms of Oscar-nominated animated films, you've got Feral, which is uniquely animated about a feral boy trying to not find his way into society. Mr. Hublot, which is a steampunk movie about a man and his dog, his steampunk dog. Very out there, but really, really cool. Especially love that steampunk look. Possessions, which is about a warrior who stumbles across an abandoned shack. And that's just beautifully animated. Room on the Broom, which is more of a kid's movie. It's cute for what it is. But my favorite is, of course, Disney's Get a Horse, which a lot of people actually got a chance to see this year because it played in front of Frozen. And it's this tribute to old school Disney animation and modern 3D CGI animation. So if you have a chance to check those out, go see them. I'm throwing in these all rock. I didn't get a chance to go through the documentaries. I just didn't have time, but those are always solid. Those are about a half hour each. They tend to run a little longer, but definitely check out the animated shorts. Check out the live action shorts. These are all fantastic pieces. They totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Now, with that sound, it looks like it's time for the DVD roundup. All right, real quick here. We got to burn through these pretty quickly. The top pick of the week is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. I thought the first film was irreverent and fun and silly and a fantastic expansion of a relatively simple children's book. The sequel, same thing. It's just as irreverent, just as silly. It loves just having some fun with the movie, and it's original. And you don't see that all that often in movies nowadays. You see so many adaptations. So even though it's a sequel, it's a unique sequel. Really cool to check out. There's also Bad Grandpa, which is the latest Johnny Knoxville film. It's a stunt movie. It's from that Jackass canon where he's doing things to unsuspecting people. But you know what? It's funny. I actually had a good time watching it. I thought the kid in it was very funny. And what's bizarre, kind of like that awkward moment, which I talked about earlier in the show, this one has a strange amount of heart that you wouldn't expect. That actually has a tender story to it. It wrapped up in this completely, ludicrous, crazy film. There's also Rush, which is not about the band or the talk show host. It is about Formula One racing, the feud between Jim Hunt and Niki Lauda in the 70s, Oscar nominations and other nominations. Last Vegas, which is, if you love old actors like Morgan Freeman, Robert De Niro, Michael Douglas, and Kevin Kline, this is about them running off to Vegas for a bachelor party, sort of like The Hangover with Geritol and Viagra. There's Argento's Dracula, which is not a great movie. It's completely bonkers, and it's nothing close to what he did with his classic Goblin era from the 70s, but still fun. Metallica Through the Never, I'm not a big fan of music. I'm not a music guy. I'm not a big fan of Metallica. If you like their stuff, you might enjoy that. And then from TV, you've got Downton Abbey Season 4. I don't watch it. I don't get into that nonsense. And Tremé Season 4, which also has the entire series on DVD and Blu-ray. The stinker of the week is The Fifth Estate, simply because this movie didn't know whether it was trying to honor Julian Assange with the WikiLeaks, or whether it's condemning him, or whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. And so it just kind of turned into this blah, this kind of lowball, soft, uncooked pizza dough delivery of a movie. Anyways, that is it. That wraps us up for Fat Guys at the Movies. Thank you so much for joining me. Enjoy your Super Bowl. Watch the trailers for the movies. Next week, we're going to talk about the Lego Movie, The Monuments Men, and Vampire Academy. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.